Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello. Hello and welcome. Welcome to Church of the Masses. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I'm a screenwriter, a producer, an educator, and a lifelong committed Catholic. I was a member of a religious women's community for 9.5 years, the Daughters of St. Paul. And so now my thing, among other things, is to talk about the intersection of faith and culture for people like me that are out there. There's not any other show, I think, like this, quite like this out there. But what we do every week is we talk about news of interest to people of faith in the culture. And then I usually interview somebody who's making culture out there, someone who's a committed Christian, who is some kind of artist or producer or, you know, somebody doing something instead of just cursing the darkness. We take very seriously here the Christopher's motto: it is better to light a single candle than to curse the darkness. So that's what we do. And then usually the last segment, I review a movie. And today I'm going to be reviewing 1917, which I saw yesterday. And I'm giving it 2 thumbs up. I think it's a very interesting project and have a lot to say about that. So, all right, well, let's plunge in here. And so this is the week the Oscar nominations came out. And everybody's buzzing about them, or maybe they came out last week, I guess. People are still buzzing about them and what didn't get nominated and why. But there's bigger news in the entertainment landscape this week, and that is the Sundance Film Festival opens on Thursday. And in my job as sewer inspector for the People of God, I went through and read about many of the films that are premiering at Sundance. And because Sundance is... Really, the festival really sets the pace for the coming year. It's an astounding number of projects that play at Sundance do get picked up and make it to the theaters. And so it's always interesting to kind of see from Sundance what the next year is going to be like. Well, I have kind of bad news. For the most part, the movies playing at Sundance, I didn't see much of anything that I was thinking, oh, this will kind of be cool. From the standpoint of spirituality or faith, there's a lot of horror and scary movies, thrillers, but scary movies. So that seems to be a little different. There's usually one or two or, you know, a handful at Sundance, but it seems like a lot of them this year are coming from that place. There's also a lot of that kind of quirky satire movie of like what's it all about kind of thing. I saw a few of that. The only one I did notice that had a spiritual theme to it is called 9 Days. And this, it came through the Sundance workshop, the Institute, the Sundance workshop that they use. They'll pick up a very promising young filmmaker and they'll work with him at Sundance for a couple of years. The film labs there. And this one, story is supposed to be, it's about souls looking for a chance to be born, have to make their pitch to a reclusive man played by Winston Duke from Black Panther. And if he, if they sell him well enough, then they get to be born. So not sure exactly what that's going to mean, but anything with a soul in it is a plus in this secular society. So there. So you might just keep your eye on what's coming out of the Sundance Festival. The other project that I noted this week, oh wait, sorry, this is the Oscar-nominated film this year, that I noted is this, it's a the Oscar-nominated short film, live action, or excuse me, it's a stop motion short, so the animated category for the Oscars, and it's called Sister. And it's coming out of CalArts experimental animation program made by a Chinese artist, filmmaker. And she, it's about the one-child policy in China. So this is the second project this year made by a female Chinese immigrant to the United States about the one-child policy and its impact. And so I do point you towards Sister. The headline on it is that it's a somber meditation on the lives affected by China's one-child policy, informed by the director's unique coming-of-age experience. So it's interesting. I think the industry is very conflicted about the one-child policy. On one hand, they're fine with abortion. They have no issues with that. But they don't like the forced abortions that were part of the one-child policy, almost invariably getting rid of little girls, right? So it was women were seven times as likely to be killed in the one-child policy as little boys. So the feminists are very kind of tied up in knots about that. They don't quite know what to think. And so that's why these projects are getting through and at a high level. And an Oscar nomination is no small thing. So keep your eye open for Sister, the CalArts short, to stop motion short. Another project I wanted to bring your attention to is called Blind Eyes Opened. And this is going to play as a Fathom event January 23rd. So Fathom, if you haven't, if you're unaware of it, you should Google Fathom events, because these will be movies that play like a special arrangement one or two times in a theater. They can't get a whole theatrical release, but the Fathom will run them as a special event. So this one called Blind Eyes Open is a Christian produced or faith-based produced documentary that looks at sex trafficking in the United States. This film is aimed at a Christian audience, but this is an issue that crosses racial, economic, cultural, and geographical borders. And I just want to point that out to you. If you're not doing anything on January 23rd, Google Fathom Events, and you can find out where it's playing locally near you for that one night. But people that I respect are saying that this is a very good project. So again, it's called Blind Eyes Open, and it exposes the horror of human trafficking in America, coming from a faith-based production company, and yet it was good enough to get distribution from Fathom Events, okay? So that's January 23rd. I also want to point out a project coming from Ben Watson of the Patriots. You know, I had the opportunity to hear Ben speak about 2-3 months ago. He spoke at the Hampton Roads pro-life gathering here in Southern Virginia. Benjamin Watson is a first string player for the New England Patriots. Like, I guess he'd be a running back, I think. Tight end. Anyway, he's got seven children and he's very, very pro-life. And so he is producing now a documentary about abortion that's budgeted about $1 million, which features Ben Carson and Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King. The movie is called Divided Hearts of America. And the idea of it is Watson interviews 30 people, some pro-life and some pro-choice, and tries to get people to talk about what they think about this issue. And, he says that things are at a fever pitch, and my goal is to unveil the truth about abortion, the laws, the history, and where our country is headed. So the idea is to put a film out there that gives both sides the opportunity to speak with the presumption that when you hear both sides, the one side that is the truth, which is our side, will ring very true and will stand out. But so again, keep that in your sights. It will probably be coming out next year if they're filming it. Actually, to tell you, it's probably coming out in the fall. And again, the movie is called Divided Hearts of America, coming from Ben Watson. I was very impressed when I heard Ben Watson speak. He's a very, very thoughtful man, very intelligent, comes from a long, solid Christian commitment, very informed. And this is his issue. He talked about how they talk about political issues on the Patriots and the football teams when they get together. And he said, it's just like regular America. People are all over He said, I share what I believe, and they're fine with that, me having that voice. So, I really liked him, and I'm interested that he's going this route. $1 million is not chump change. That's a lot of money for a documentary, especially. Documentaries usually, their budget is like a piece of chicken. They don't usually have that much money. So for somebody to put $1 million into a documentary is considerable commitment. And so Ben Watson deserves to be thanked for that and to be supported. Again, we just have – our side just has to do this. The other side is so much more willing to finance and produce – projects of this nature. And but we on our side, we sit there and criticizing and critiquing and just kind of trying to push it, block it all away. And meanwhile, there are people out there that we could approach and that we could reach. So keep your eyes open for Divided Hearts of America. And then the other thing I wanted to just comment again on the Oscars. I think kind of interesting about this year's Oscars, for the first time in recent memory, they're actually movies that people have seen. I believe 6 of the 9 films nominated for Best Picture this year have already crossed the 100 million mark. So that's good. That's good. Okay, stay tuned. We have a great guest coming up. This is Barbara Nicolosi of Church of the Masses Radio.
This is Terry Barber, and Myra Brown is with me. Myra, welcome.
Hi, Terry. I am so happy to be here with you today because I am up to something that I think you'll find very interesting.
Tell me, what is it, Myra?
Well, I want to give away a DVD, your famous 3-hour talk about how to share your faith with everyone. And do you know how I'm going to do it?
Tell me.
Well, me and my friend Annie Jo are calling everybody to talk about monthly donations, because that is how we keep this station alive.
Absolutely.
And so every person that answers either our email or answers our phone call will get that talk.
And they can get it by calling 877-526-2151. And just tell us how you heard about it, because I really am excited about Myra's project, because we want to have Virgin Most Powerful in every state in the union.
Yep, and we're going to do it with your help. So answer the phone call, answer that email, and I look forward to getting your prayer intention then.
God love you.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Mm-hmm. Hello again, and welcome to Church of the Masses. I'm Barbara Nicolosi, and my cat knocked it over here. Let's see if I can get it better here. There we go. Yeah, so this is the show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. I am a screenwriter, a producer, a script doctor, And I am an educator. I have my doctorate in creative writing from Bath Spa University in the UK, and now I am the director of screenwriting programs at Regent University. And I'm having technical issues with my camera here. Let's see if this will work now. Hold on. Okay, so today we have a great guest, my former roommate, and here we go. Sorry, I don't think bode well. Here we go. Okay, good. My former roommate, interestingly enough, who is an accomplished actor, director, teacher, coach, all things theater. And I am so happy to have her here. I've been wanting to ever since we started the show because I want her to teach us about theater. So please welcome Marianne Sable. Hi, Marianne.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Church of the Masses.
How fun. Thank you so much for having me, Barbara.
Well, thanks for being on. And so Marianne and I met, oh my goodness, I think we're probably going back to 1998 or 99.
Yeah. 99. Yeah.
Yeah, 99. And I met, Marianne was working at the Actors Co-op in Hollywood, which is a Christian theater company. Well, I hate saying that because I don't want you to think they do Christian stuff. They don't. They do mainstream stuff, but they are all Christians who are in the company, and they're really very accomplished, most award-winning company, in a very, very successful company. And Marianne was part of that when we met, and then we became roommates, and we were together on 9/11. You remember that in the morning on 9/11?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yes, it's indelible in my mind. Every time I think of that day, I always think of you, too. And but anyway, so Marianne has been at it for a while. She has her MFA from the University of Illinois at Urbana. She's, oh, my goodness, guest artist, Central School of Speech and Drama in London, a member of Actors Equity. So you're an actor, but you're a director, and again, you're a teacher and a coach. So I have to say, and I don't say things like this lightly, I don't know anybody who knows more about theater, the art of it, and the beauty of it, and making it happen than Marianne. So I'm really, really thrilled to have her.
That's so kind.
No.
I think that we'll get you out more. So you'll,
No, you're amazing. I mean, I'm looking at the list here of credits, and it's, you know, fully more than a half a page long of all the shows you've been involved in. So let's just jump right in, Marianne. Give my audience a sense of how you got into this. How did you know you were going to be an actor, and then, you know, how you made the big jump to be a director and everything else you're doing? But how did you know?
That's a great question. My mother convinced me to audition for a play when I was in college. My first summer out of my freshman year, my mom said, "Hey, why don't you audition for a play? We had just moved to a new town." She said, "You'll make some friends." And I thought, "Oh, that's cool." So I went and auditioned for a play, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll be in the chorus. This is how little I knew about theater. I was auditioning for a play that doesn't have a chorus. But I was cast as Sandy in Greece.
Huh.
And
first go.
Yes.
Wow.
And all the actors in the show were theater majors from different colleges around the country. And I spent my summer doing theater. And at one point during the summer, my dad, who at the time was a pastor of a Baptist church in Upper Peninsula, Michigan, he said to me, "You know, why don't you not get a job this summer? Why don't you just live the life of an actor?"
Wow. That's so radical from what we hear all the time, right? Which is parents telling their kids, "Don't be an actor." You know, I mean, that's really amazing.
I know. Well, it gets even more radical. So we're about to open the play. Remember, this is my first play. And I come home from rehearsal. This is probably about a week before we open. And I said to my dad, I knew he was going to make me quit the play because I was wearing skin-tight black pants, smoking a cigarette. I punched someone. I said a bad word. And I'm like, there's no way he's not going to put up with this.
Yeah.
So I come home and I tell him what I have to do in the play. And his response was, well, of course you do. It's a theater.
Good for him.
Oh, okay. So my parents were at every show.
Wow.
It was a summer theater. You know, they came to every show. And there were other times in my future when I was getting my MFA in acting, I was in a show and my dad called me out of the blue and said, you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to be in the area because they were living in Seattle and I was in Illinois. And he said, I'm going to be able to see your show. And I panicked because the show I was doing is a really brilliant play called Albertine and Five Times by Michel Tremblay. It's a French-Canadian play. And it's the play where Edward Albee got the idea for Three Tall Women, which won the Pulitzer. And my character in this play was so vile and so full of rage. Mm-hmm. And her first line in the play was...
Don't say it if it's R-rated.
I'm not going to say it. But it was really, you know, God's name in vain, smoking, saying vile, vile things. Mm-hmm. So I warned, I said, Dad, really, this is, wow, this is not the show to see. But he comes to the show, and after the show, he says to me, oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. I'm going to be preaching about this play on Sunday. This play is about life mapping. I love this, you know. And I was like, wow.
That's good. You had parents who saw your potential and then supported you in it. I mean, that's no small thing. It's really not, because we know pretty much everybody that we knew in Hollywood had been told by somebody back home, you know, walk away from this, you know, don't do this. And so it's so refreshing to hear a Christian and a Baptist pastor of all things support you in your work and understand. You know, Karen Hall, my friend who's a writer who you know, she always says, somebody has to play the bad guys, you know, like otherwise there's no, you know, I mean, you can't just have happy, you know, goodness. There's no drama in that. Drama is sin, you know, it's about that and people wrestling with it. So so that's amazing. So
you know,
so then go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and of course, I also think that in any kind of great script, the good guy is also the bad guy, right? If you're going to have a fully honest script, you're going to have very complex people who are dealing with their stuff. And that my dad, for whatever reason, my mom and dad just kind of got that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're absolutely true. I say to my students all the time, a great character is one that has a deep-seated paradox at the core of their nature. Right? You can't just get rid of your bad stuff because it's so tied to your good stuff, right? You have to find a way to reconcile. So that's great. So a theater, which I came to love mainly because of you, you know, you got me involved in the Actors Co-op and then I started going to the shows and producing them there and then started realizing how powerful the medium is. Now, I think that for Christians, our renaissance in the dramatic arts could really begin with theater because theater's doable. You know, compared to film, it's financially doable. It's more manageable. You can just mount a play with, you know, $50,000, $30,000 to $50,000, and you can get a play going. Whereas a movie, you know, that's not going to get it done. You know, you need a million or two, really, to kind of even start. So I would love to see a movement of Christians in theater to kind of get our people back. Because one of the things I find is a lot of Christians don't go to plays at all with any regularity. I mean, they go to New York, they'll go to a musical or something. But for the most part, a lot of our people... they've kind of signed off on that. Well, why do you think that is? I have my own opinion, but why do you think so many Christians have kind of walked away from the medium of theater?
Well, that's a good question. So I'm going to talk about the audience then. I think a lot of times, right now I'm directing a very funny classic play called Steel Magnolias. It's the 30th anniversary right now of the film. The play, of course, was first.
And is that up in Seattle?
Line of the play. Yes, at Taproot Theater in Seattle. There's a very funny line, you know, where one of the characters says, you know, I don't see movies because everyone's naked. I don't go to the play because I can nap for free. Theater is very difficult because it's happening live. So you don't get the perfect edit, right? It's happening in the moment. So if something goes wrong, or if something goes terribly right, whatever, that happened.
Yeah.
And you keep moving forward in the story. So you hear oftentimes, you know, a film star is going to take a shot at the stage and on Broadway. You know, you don't hear about theater actors. They're going to take a shot at film. No, theater is the art form that is most demanding of every second for however long the play is. So if the play is a 2-hour play, you may have an intermission or not. You have to be completely present in an imaginary story in front of other people.
Yeah.
And you probably saw recently there's been a scientific proof that people in a theater's heart rates all come together.
Yeah, I saw that. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so, and so you're having to do this thing live. You're depending on the space you're in, you're having to change the style of your movement in terms of the play I'm directing right now is in a deep thrust. So my actors have a lot more freedom, a lot more natural movement because in a proscenium, you oftentimes will place most of the action towards the audience. But in a thrust, you've got three sides of audience.
Yes.
And so, you've seen tons of plays in the thrust at Actors Club.
Sure. Yeah, and the actors have nowhere to hide. You know, I mean, it's like they're right out there in the middle of you. You know, and it's so it pulls the audience in too.
So I think that a couple of things. I think theater is expensive. Mm-hmm. Although movies are getting more expensive, but theater's expensive.
You mean expensive to go. So that's one. That is a thing, right? Yeah. No, I mean, it can be like, you know, for an LA show, like $100 a ticket, you know, for Amundsen or Ford Theater or something like that. You know, even the co-op, it's like 35, right? You know, so you're talking two tickets and dinner, it's $150.
That's right. Oh. Now, some people
Hold that. And we're talking to Marianne Saville, who is Mistress Wonderful of All Theater Things. So this is Barbara Nicolosi on Church of the Masses. Stay tuned.
This is Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio. This March, VMPR, in association with the Catholic Resource Center, will be hosting a special conference for the Adoremus Society. Adoremus at the Triduum, a conference on the spirituality of the Triduum liturgies, featuring speakers Father Joseph Fessio, Dr. Anthony Lillis, and Christopher Karstens, addressing such topics as developing a liturgical spirituality, the spirituality of Holy Thursday, the spirituality of Good Friday, and the spirituality of the Paschal Vigil and Easter season. It all takes place March 14th, 2020, at the historic Sacred Heart Chapel at 381 West Center Street, Covina, California, 91723. You can register online at vmpr.org or call now at 877-526-2151 to reserve your seat today for Adoremus at the Triduum.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And here's an easy way to support us by going to smile.amazon.com and type in Catholic Resource Center or Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And when you log in your Amazon account and you purchase products, a portion of it will go right back in supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And it doesn't cost you a dime. I want to thank you ahead of time because that supports us year-round. May God bless you and your family.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello again, and welcome back. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. I am a person who's a writer, a dramatic writer, and I'm a very committed Christian. So I kind of have this show every week where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. And I do movie reviews. I'm going to be reviewing 1917 in my last segment here. But right now I have an amazing guest. Marion Saville is an extraordinary director of theater and actor. She has multiple award-winning credits on the stage and knows more about it than anybody I know. And so I'm very happy to have her. So we were talking about the power of theater and the audience. One of the reasons maybe Christians have stayed away. So one reason is maybe why, you know, many people, lower middle class have stayed away, is it's just gotten so expensive. And so that's one thing. What else do you think, Marianne?
Well, I think also, you know, unlike the film industry, theater does not have any kind of rating system. So you could go see a show and have no idea what might happen or what you might see. Now, there are people in the theater industry that are thinking, hey, it wouldn't be bad to do some sort of rating so a person could know. Of course, someone could always call the theater and say, hi, you know, can you tell me about the content?
Can I take my 14-year-old? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So I think there's concern there. Mm-hmm. However, I think that, and this is something I wanted to bring up, a couple years ago, right before the most recent election, I directed Freud's Last Session at a theater in Virginia. And we ended up turning away about 500 people during our run of that show. Mm-hmm. People wanted to see what civil discourse looked like between two people who had very opposing worldviews. Mm-hmm. Because the play is an imagination. What if these guys had a meeting, you know, not to people wanted to see that, and it was interesting. The conversation after the play.
Hey, Marianne, we're losing you a little bit. Can you call back in? I think our connection's been bad. So that's my friend Marianne Saville. She is a director of theater, a multi-award winning credit. And, you know, she's making a really great point that when the play is about something that is the zeitgeist, is what people are thinking about, they will come out to see it. And but I do think that of Christians, you know, we are, it's what she said, they're a little bit camera shy or whatever, stage shy, because, you know, we've seen stuff on the stage. And it's bad enough when you see something in the screen that's offensive in some way, that may be, you know, kind of something against your values. But on the stage, when it's 10 feet away or 20 feet away, it can really, really be impressive. And I think that that's one thing too, that that people are afraid of. I think people are a little bit afraid of how powerful theater can be. And we Christians, we don't like to have our world rocked. Are you there again, Marianne?
I'm back. Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm very glad. Okay. All right. Here, I want to just segue over to something, because I don't want the time to go. There's so many things we're going to have you on again so we can talk about this. But so a lot of my audience, what I try to do is encourage people to do stuff, to make stuff, right? So if you're looking for a play, what makes a play a great play?
Oh, that's it depends on if you're talking about what makes a play a great play or what makes a production a great production.
Okay, talk about both.
A play is a script. Mm-hmm. A production is a expression of that script by a group of people. So, yeah. you know, what makes a great play, I guess what makes a great play is something that is based in truth. And what I mean by that is, when I say truth, I'm not talking about capital T truth so much as I am talking about the human existence.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So it could be about different people, different humans' existences, in terms of maybe a world that someone who only spends time with the people in their group don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, film is a great way to experience that because you can always turn it off or fast forward if there's something you don't want to see. In the theater, I guess you could close your eyes.
Yeah, I know, but still, you're kind of there, you know. But, you know, I mean, I'm interested because, you know, I just started working and writing my own plays, but, you know, I've been a movie person. That's my art form. And you try to say, okay, this is what makes a great movie. You know, is it, it allows these four great art forms to be expressed, you know, these four, music and composition, performance and storytelling. Say, but what makes a great play? You know, it's by contrast with a great movie, you know, and you say, one thing they're always doing to me is, I have a great idea for a movie, right? You know, it's like, well, what makes it a great idea for a movie? You know, it's a very specific few things. It's like, oh yeah, that would be a good movie. So what, you know, if you're looking for a play and you're like, wow, this one really will work, what would stand out for you?
I guess very similar to a film in terms of plot, in terms of character development, character depth, excellent dialogue that fits in the world.
Yeah. Now see, that's a little bit of a difference because in a movie, the dialogue is like the icing on the cake. You know, the first thing for us is the images, and then you can have some great lines in there. But theater is very much a verbal art form. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yes. The dialogue is huge. So dialogue that makes sense, it's surprising. I mean, we all want to be surprised, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to know what's going to happen. There's nothing more boring than being able to say the line before the character does.
Right, exactly. You know, especially if you've been waiting for it for 5 minutes, you know, in the play, it's like somebody's going to say this, you know, and then they do. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then of course, sometimes, a great playwright will plant a seed, and you will be hoping that seed will come to fruition, right? And so you might be looking for it, or it might show up and you're like surprised and delighted, but it makes sense because you saw the seed being planted. You know, right now we're in interesting times in terms of for so much of American history, our great writers were white men. And now we're having to go, wait a minute, that worldview is, it's a part of a worldview, but it's not the worldview of our entire country.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
so we're trying to give voices to people who haven't had an opportunity to share their worldview with everyone. And so I think that it's really exciting right now. It's also can be scary because we're all going to mess up. That's just okay. I mean, it has to be okay. There's, you know, there's messing up where you break a law. There's messing up and you don't care because you're right.
Right.
There's messing up and going, whoa, wow.
I didn't appreciate that before. I didn't think about that before.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So
that's a big
issue. Because one of the things that happens oftentimes, too, if you're not into Christian faith, you can assume that all Christians are the same. When we, you know, you put a group of Christians in the room, you're going to have radically different ideas about social justice. You're going to have radically different ideas about huge social issues. And I think, you know, most people, I think, understand that.
Yeah.
But I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
And I think theater puts everybody in the room together. And we have to sit by each other. We have to breathe the same air.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I would love to see more in the theater is more relationship after a show between the audience and the artists.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny you say that. One time I went to I went to the play Wit at the Amundsen, and I had bumped into a woman on the way in, and we just like hated each other immediately, you know. It was like that, the weirdest thing, you know. And through the play, she was like kept moving in front of me, and I was like, ugh. But then at the end of the play, we hit the aisle, and I looked at her and I said, "This play made me want to be kind." And she said, "Me too, darling, me too." And she like threw her arms around me, and the two of us sat there hugging, and our husbands were like, "What?" You know? But I mean, that's theater, right? You know, it has this ability to bring you into intimacy, not only with the production, but with each other. You know, we only have a couple minutes left, Marianne, but I want to ask you to help the audience here. When you go to see a play, because, you know, I mean, one of the things I do, people ask me all the time, how do you watch a movie? So I would throw that out to you and say, okay, how do you watch a play? What do you do when you go to a play?
If you can, go to a play when you're rested. So, you know, try to get your tickets and plan ahead and go, you know, I'm seeing a play tonight and I want to be completely available and present. I want to be a full participant. And so if Friday night is the night you're the most tired, don't see a play on a Friday night. See it on Saturday. See it on Wednesday. So I think being available to it, being emotionally open, part of the artist's job, and that's the playwright, right? The playwright uses several techniques to open people's hearts, and oftentimes it's with humor or with beauty or with something that is surprising, right? And suddenly you're like, whoa, you're open. But if you can come in wanting to be open, wanting to engage with the play, you're going to be way ahead.
Great, great advice. I mean, in some ways, that's true of every art form, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to go exhausted to a movie or a museum to see paintings either. You know, you want to be able to have that part of you to combine with the artist and what they're doing. But I think you're right. I think there's something about theater, especially you go, you sit in the dark and, you know, they turn the lights out there and, you know, you're sitting in the dark and you, if you're tired, you know, yeah, it's just going to be hard to do your part. And I love the idea that you're suggesting that the audience has a part in the show. Could you just expand on that? Oh, we got 28 and 27 seconds.
Oh, it's a huge part. It's a huge part. Imagine those heartbeats all coming together in the room. That is working together to talk to experience source.
Cool. Hey, Marianne, thank you so much. We're going to have you on again real soon because we have great.
Love
it.
Thanks, Barbara.
2017.
This is Matthew Arnold inviting you to listen to Happy Hour on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Every week, I offer reflections on the Sunday readings of the extraordinary form of the Mass and take a traditional look at the many challenges facing Catholics today. Drawing on scripture and medieval sources like the Imitation of Christ, I'll help you on your personal quest for spiritual perfection so that you can find true happiness in holiness. Check out Happy Hour live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on our Virgin Most Powerful Radio YouTube channel or our VMPR smartphone app. It's easy to download the app to your phone from the App Store or when you visit our website, vmpr.org. That's Happy Hour live every Friday at noon or anytime on demand. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Jesus said in Luke 17, "When you have done all that you were ordered to do, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have only done our duty.'" According to St. John of the Cross, God is pleased with the little deeds we do in secret. He takes more pleasure in these than in a multitude of grand works that we may do out of the desire to be seen by others. May God help us to do the things that please Him and not just to appear great in the eyes of others.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and here we are for the last segment. I'm always amazed how the hour goes by. Look at my great St. Michael there behind me. Isn't that great? My friend gave me that. She worked in Hollywood for many years, and then when she left Hollywood, she gave me the statue and said, anybody staying in Hollywood needs one of these. So he's always kind of over my shoulder. Now we're going to talk about 1917, and I have to admit, I was a little reticent about seeing this film because I heard about the gimmick of it. And also, I'm not a big Sam Mendes fan. He made the movie American Beauty, which I thought was very overrated. And I was reticent to see the movie. But I have to admit, it's a stunning cinematic achievement. You don't even want to say it's a stunning movie. It's a stunning cinematic achievement, and I'm going to explain why. But 1917 has 10 Oscar nominations. I think the awful movie The Joker got 11, and I hate that movie Joker. But 1917 has 10 Oscar nominations. So in so many different categories: cinematography, score, directing, a lot of the biggies, editing, etc. What's the deal with 1917? So when I heard the thing of it, I thought, oh, that's too gimmicky. But it does actually produce an amazing experience. So the thing of 1917 is that they tried to shoot it like it was all in one shot. So if you've ever seen Rope by Alfred Hitchcock, he shot this in one kind of shot, and then whenever they needed to change the film because the film ran out on the camera, they would go to something like the shot of the top of the box, and then hold on that, and then they could cut, come back in on it, and then there they were. But this idea of, can I tell a movie all in one shot, like as though it's one shot? So when I heard that, I was like, that's kind of gimmicky. But what it does in 1917 is give you an astounding sense of perspective, that the character in the movie, you never lose really sight of him because he's just, the camera is always tracking right with him. And I've never seen anything like this. And even the cleverness of I don't even know how they did some of what they did in this movie, because they have, him walking or running through in the beginning of the movie, the trenches in World War One, and it's just the camera is right there with them and is backpedaling. The camera's backpedaling and the characters are running, and they do this several times in the movie, and it's not movie speed. They're really running and the camera's backpedaling through these complicated trenches with, extras coming and going and puddles and bodies and, things sticking out and you're right in the actor's right there and they don't cut away, you stay with it. The camera will kind of come around them, and then you were in the back of them. Now you're in the front of them, but they never kind of lose them. So from the standpoint of a cinema, I had never seen anything like 1917. And I think that's why people are in the industry are raving about the movie, because the achievement of, first of all, production design, having that much, usually a set is small. They move outside the set. We cut, and then we go to another set and you keep it boundary. There's like no boundaries in 1917. The sets just go on and on and on because the character's running through them. He's running across fields. He's running through the trenches. He's running, you know, through the bombed out towns. And you stay with him and you're like, how big is the shooting location of this movie? You know, it feels like it's like 50 miles, you know, and the movie just keeps, you know, moving on and you get the next vista. And anyway, I don't know how they did it, but as a movie, I've never seen anything quite like it. Now, as a story, it's extremely simple. And there's not much there by way of character transformation. The arc of the character is very slight. That's really not what it's about. It's not, this is not a ripping good tale. This is a cinematic achievement. It's meant to give you an experience of perspective, and specifically the perspective of war, that you are tracking with originally two guys, and it's one guy who's out in the thick of it. And the war specifically is World War I. So we are looking at the terrible reality of the trenches and the, you know, full of water and bodies bloated and floating. And then we're looking at the devastation of the first modern, really modern war, which is World War I. And that you still have this kind of half of World War I, the thing that made it so horrible was people were still fighting an old kind of warfare. So you have, you know, the horses, people using horses and bombs. You know, these things don't go together. But in World War I, they did. And that made for just a mess of carnage. They didn't know that the bombs were indiscriminate. So, you know, just like the whole towns just destroyed, and that appears in the movie. So this is an experience of World War I through the perspective of one soldier who has tasked with a mission to deliver a message. And so there's the arc of the character is, you know, is he going to keep going? He does, never really in doubt. And kind of at the end, you just leave him like he'll never be the same. He's going to carry this last day. One day of his life is going to haunt him, and he's going to have nightmares about it for the rest of his life, I think. I think that's the basic arc or trajectory there. But that's not what this movie is. You know, certain movies are different things. Some movies are really rooted in story. Some movies are rooted in entertainment, and some movies are rooted in art. 1917 is an art movie. It's an idea by the director, and then he gets this cinematographer whose name is Deakins, I believe. He's a very famous cinematographer. Hold it just a second. I'm pretty sure it's Roger Deakins. He's multiple. Yeah, Roger Deakins is, you know, multiple Oscar nominated cinematographer. And there's not a lot of cinematographers who could have pulled off what he does. But the idea here was you get the director having this vision. I want to give people a first person experience, perspective of war, and specifically World War I. And Deakins says, OK, let's do it. And he executes this phenomenal thing. Now, when you're watching it, if you're not a film person, you're missing that every time normally in movies that characters move outside, you know, actors move outside of a certain area, it's called blocking, they go out of focus. Like it's every scene is lit so that, you know, every location is lit so that the actors don't go out of focus. And that's the magic of cinema, is that they stay in focus even if they are moving slightly. In this movie, you have characters running through locations and they don't go out of focus. And I don't know how he did that. I really don't. You know, I mean, yeah, Steadicam is a technology that they have. But this movie felt like they were just running through things. And I mean, I was trying to imagine, is this a crane shot? Is this Steadicam? You know, are they just running? Is it on track? You know, it's hard to tell because of the, especially the beginning, it's like if they had tracked, I don't know how they did that because you're in the twists and turns of the trenches. Anyway, what I'm saying is I never saw a movie like 1917. It deserves all of the accolades it's getting technologically. I really think it moves us into a new place. What's interesting is that the director, Sam Mendes, comes out of the theater world, and most of his other projects have been like steeped in kind of theater. I felt watching his movies, oh, here's another play on the screen by Sam Mendes. This one is so cinematic, it actually is going to, it almost changes the definition of what cinematic means. It's so unbelievably cinematic. Now, I'm sure that's mainly Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, but still, you got to give Sam Mendes chops for an incredible vision here, not something you've ever seen. So there's nothing in the movie in terms of sex or language. Violence in the movie, there is, you know, people getting shot here and there, but it's not like, you know, watching brain matter, you know, go off like anything like that. It's, you know, it's war. So people just fall over and it's not, you know, meant to be stylized at all. There's nothing stylized in this movie. So the violence is, it's not so much the violence that's disturbing, because again, I think it's restrained. What is just the scale of the death, right? You know, the bodies and the, you know, piled up or in the bo- and that's just real. But it isn't done for entertainment value. It isn't spectacleized. So I had no problem with this movie as a Christian. I don't have any red flags to offer. The only thing I would say is, you know, your child is impressionable. You know, maybe wait till they're a teenager, mid-teenager, to see it, because, you know, World War I was a nightmare, and this movie shows that very clearly. I also want to highlight, though, one of, I think it's going to be one of my favorite scenes of all time, and this is at one point in the movie, the soldier seeks refuge in a burned-out building in a village in France, and he finds a young woman there. And she has a baby, and it's just a beautiful, like, plateau moment in the movie, which the movie just moves from, you know, all 2.5 hours, it just moves. But this is like a resting point in the movie, and like the midpoint. And he meets this woman, and she has a baby, and turns out the baby isn't even her. She doesn't even know. She just kind of has found this child, and they found each other, and now they're responsible for each other. And then he becomes responsible for both of them and shares everything he has to help keep them alive. It's a beautiful, humane moment, and lovingly shot in a very sepia tone. But you feel like you know everything principally about these two characters, this woman and this, you know, young soldier. Everything that matters, you learn in that little scene. And it's very powerful. And I think it stands out even more because it is this moment of calm in the middle of a movie that's racing. So, two thumbs up for 1917. Go see it, and go see it on the big screen. It really is meant to be seen on the big screen. All right. Well, stay tuned to future episodes of Church of the Masses. It's wonderful to have you. Tell your friends. My name is Barbara Nicolosi, and this is the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.